coming up on Golf Today. John Rahm speaks in Delaware about the season that was and the playoffs that are. What is the state of mind of the former world number one as he looks for a loud finish to what has been a relatively quiet season? Nehemiah Stark has made a lot of noise in 2022 with three LET wins, including a first LPGA win. Maya joins the show to talk about her golf swing, the influence of Tiger Woods, and her days at Oklahoma State. And on the week of the U.S. Amateur, we thought it was smart to bring in a guy who won it 15 years ago. He's chatty, he's lively, he's funny, he's tingly, he's Colt Knost. He joins this very show coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on a Tuesday, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. And yes, we talk Tiger, usually where's his plane going before a major championship, maybe a practice round with a head pro is somewhere in Oklahoma. This is a little bit different. Tiger Woods reportedly headed to a meeting.
He is at the BMW Championship in Delaware. There is a Players Advisory Council meeting this afternoon at 3 p.m. There's a broader players meeting after that at which Tiger is going to speak, and it's obviously devoted to the subject that is really the only subject
is
in
that?
Golf these days, which is the Live Tour and how to combat it if you're a PGA Tour loyalist. And Tiger's reminding people he's still the clearest voice in the room. You know, he's the standard against which everyone on the PGA Tour is judged, and he's the standard that Greg Norman thinks can be replicated with 54-hole tournaments, and Tiger's there to remind them that he is that standard and that, as we saw at the Open Championship in his public comments there, he's ready for the fight.
Fascinating that this is a role that he has chosen to play. Someone who at this time in his life and career could have just kind of stayed on the sidelines and kind of poked his head out when he wanted to. I think it reminds us of his view of golf and how it is dug out of the dirt, and how his 82 wins, his 15 major championships were by dint of hard work and excellence, and that he is not for 54 holes with music in the background. And he also doesn't necessarily have a great relationship with Greg Norman and Phil Mickelson as well, two of the faces of LIV Golf Enterprise.
Well, that wouldn't be a minority position in golf, and there are plenty of people who have actually signed with LIV who don't have much affection for either Greg Norman or Phil Mickelson. That might not even be the deciding factor here. I think Tiger spent his entire public career avoiding being conscripted into what he saw as someone else's battles. That could be a lot around social justice issues. It could have been a lot of golf issues, politics, whatever it was. Tiger avoided being dragged into a battle that he didn't think was his. Clearly, he does think this battle is his. And, you know, he's made it clear in private conversations with a lot of the players that he's up for this fight. And that's what we saw at St. Andrews, and we're going to see it in action today.
Let's dive right in, because this is the story. This is the week, of course, the PGA Tour. It's in Wilmington, Delaware, for the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, marking the first time this event is being held in Delaware. But it's Tuesday ahead of the BMW Championship. We're talking about Tiger Woods. Why? Because reportedly later today, the 15-time major champ expected to fly up to Wilmington, Delaware to attend a players meeting. And that's where our Kira K. Dixon is reporting from this week. Kira, what are you hearing about the plan for later on today?
Well, Damon, there's of course going to be a golf tournament played here this week, but with so many of the top players in the world coalescing in Delaware, it's also an opportunity to take care of some housekeeping matters. Now, there will be two separate meetings today, one at 3 p.m. for the Players Advisory Council. I'm told that this meeting is just to go through some standard procedure matters for the PGA Tour. New members of the Player Advisory Council, like Max Homa and Keith Mitchell, will be in attendance at that meeting. And then later this evening, I've not been given a specific time, just this evening, there will be a meeting that's limited to a smaller group of players. A player did confirm to me that Tiger Woods will be in attendance, and that this is a conversation that's a continuation of something that started at Adair Manor in Ireland at the JP McManus Pro-Am ahead of the Open Championship, and that the goal of today's meeting is to continue discussing ideas for the betterment of the future of the PGA Tour.
Kira K. Dixon reporting for us in Delaware today. And the big news, Tiger Woods flying up to Wilmington on a Tuesday ahead of a tournament that he's not playing in, Eamon? Is this a show of strength by Tiger Woods and the PGA Tour, or is this a panic move in your mind?
I'm not convinced this either. I don't think it's a panic move. There are some players, there's a certain camp on the PGA Tour of players who are prone to fretfulness, and they hear all these rumours about a Cam Smith jumping, or this idea that there could be a flood of guys who leave after the FedEx Cup playoffs. There's no evidence that that's actually coming at this point. Perhaps there's some evidence on the Cam Smith stuff, but there's no evidence of an absolute deluge of guys heading out the door. And the lawsuit victory in the PGA Tour's favour last week will probably stem that flow a little bit when these guys can't actually play both. But I think it's not necessarily a show of strength either. It's a show of interest from Tiger. And to Kira's point about this conversation having started at the JP McManus Pro-Am, that was a very, very select group of players who were there, including some LIV guys, actually, who played the Pro-Am. But the PGA Tour loyalists, you're talking about the elite top 10, top 15 in the world. And to me, what this is evidence of is that the contrary to what LIV suggests in public, the PGA Tour players and loyalists are not like sheep being herded along to their doom by blinded executives at the PGA Tour. The players have their own vision as well, which mostly aligns with Jay Monahan's, not entirely, but they're presenting that vision in due course to Jay Monahan and his team. This is what needs to happen for the PGA Tour to thrive going forward, based on what we want to see and what we think is necessary. And I've been told by people at the tour that Monahan seems receptive to many of the ideas, that if they are acceptable and feasible, that these ideas could be acted upon pretty quickly. So to me, it's these guys presenting a vision, and the two guys who are most closely associated with that are Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy.
And you know that this is not really an old, or this is not like a new issue or battle that the PGA Tour, you know, membership has dealt with. You know, think 15, 20 years ago, there's always been kind of that issue between the top 10, top 20, the best players on the PGA Tour versus kind of the larger membership in terms of, you know, should they play in the fall? Phil Mickelson used to complain about, why should I play in the fall and let these guys who aren't as good as me get a head start, for example, in the FedEx Cup playoffs? There's always been that kind of push and pull, even between the larger PGA Tour membership. I think what LIV Golf has done has made the tour as a whole have a little bit more of a rallying cry. I see this, Eamon, as kind of a battle for the news cycle. You know, whether it's momentum real or perceived, when LIV Golf says, hey, Bryson DeChambeau has signed, or Bubba Watson about to join, how much is this, with Tiger Woods flying up there, also just a battle for momentum real or perceived, and kind of to own the news cycle, if only for 24 hours?
Owning the news cycles is not irrelevant to this, but I would argue it's more logistics as well.
What
because
do you mean?
You have the top 70 guys on the PGA Tour in the field this week. Some of the top guys aren't going to be working next week in Eastlake. They might not make it through the bubble. After that, they're going to scatter to the winds for months, as these guys typically do. So I think it's an opportunistic scheduling to get a bunch of guys together. Tiger's the only one who has to fly in for this meeting. And I think Tiger is very much in Jay Monahan's camp. The idea that's been floated out there that Jay Monahan's job is in some jeopardy, I don't think it's backed up with any evidence or sentiment on the PGA Tour at all. He's got the firm backing of Tiger Woods. He's got the firm backing of Rory McIlroy. He's got the backing of Justin Thomas, Will Zalatoris. All of those guys are very much in the Monahan camp, and they are perceived as working with him to present this vision to the broader membership of what they want. It's clearly going to be influenced by the top players in the world, because they are the assets here. That's what LIV wants to kind of lure away with guaranteed money, and guaranteed money may be the solution that they're going to go for. And I think it goes beyond the traditional conflict that we see between the upper echelon of the PGA Tour and the middle and lower ranks of the tour, because this one calls into question the very business model of the tour, in the sense that, can you create some kind of new mechanism for some tournaments?
Guaranteed,
is there guaranteed money? Can you contract the talent in some way? Does it have to operate under the non-profit umbrella that it has been before? And the tour has already signaled some interest in working outside of that, because the three overseas big money events that they've been talking about having at the end of next year could possibly be held under a for-profit enterprise that is not necessarily just simply a regular PGA Tour event. So that's the direction I think this conversation ultimately moves. It's a cultural shift and it's a structural shift for how the PGA Tour operates. And that's the road that the Tiger Woods and the Rory McIlroys are trying to nudge this down to try to combat LIV.
And a shift for Tiger Woods, who at the height of his power, very much kind of walking a very safe line and not really, at least publicly, taking sides in any real, you know, social issue, for example. He obviously did his work with the foundation, Tiger Woods Foundation, and STEM education for young kids that are, you know, kind of from the Southern California area. Are you surprised that at this point in his career, like, what does he have to gain at this point by flying up to Delaware?
It's what he has to lose. And Tiger has set the standard for the PGA Tour, regardless of the fact that he's, you know, tied with Sam Snead on the records list. Tiger's list is impregnable. Sam's has a lot of questions about it. Tiger is the standard on the PGA Tour. And being told that somehow all of those wins don't really count for anything, that they can be replicated by this kind of circus golf that we see on the LIV Tour right now, I think that has got Tiger's dander up, and he's ready for the fight for this kind of traditional idea of what he regards to be the kind of golf that matters.
And the specter of Greg Norman on the other side as the CEO of LIV Golf has to also have his antenna up as well.
It certainly does. Do you miss the days when we actually used to talk just about golf, Dave?
Yeah, when were those days?
Well, we can do it now. Still to come on Golf Today, the latest winner on the LPGA Tour is joining a Swedish sensation, Maja Stark. Fresh off a runaway victory last weekend, she's going to talk about the win and what comes next. Stay with us.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, big Sunday for 22-year-old Maja Stark, who took home the title at the ISPS Handa World Invitational for her first win on the LPGA Tour. Stark's five-shot victory ties the largest margin of victory this season on the LPGA Tour. Now, her 10-under round of 63 on Sunday ties the lowest final round of par by a winner this season. And how about this season in review? Three wins on the LET Tour, the Women's New South Wales Open back in May, the Amundi German Masters in July, then the ISPS Handa World Invitational on Sunday, and earning that LPGA membership with Sunday's victory. And the winner herself joins us now. Maja, congratulations. Since turning pro last year, you have won in your native Sweden, Spain, Australia, Germany, and now Northern Ireland. What have you learned about yourself during this run?
So much. Where do I even begin? I think this has been more rewarding, and I've learned more about myself than I have ever done during my amateur career. But now it's just that I actually can win stuff, because I didn't win a single big thing when I was an amateur. This is something new.
Maja, you started on Sunday at the ISPS Handa Championship in Northern Ireland, two back, and then you made nine birdies in the first 14 holes. At what point during the day did you realise this was going to be your day?
I think I didn't really believe that it was ever my day, because I didn't look at the leaderboard at all. Until I caught a glimpse of one on hole 13, but then it was still pretty tight. Then I saw it on 17, that I was leading by like five. But I always think, well, they're gonna make like eagles and birdies coming in, so you never know what's gonna happen, and I might lose this any second. But I think I didn't realize it until the last putt.
This was a rare event in that men and women were playing the same courses for the same purse. What was the vibe like at a tournament like that? And is that something you'd be interested in doing more often?
The vibe was very good. I think everyone had a good time, and it's always nice to just see new people. We had the LPGA people there too, and and the guys. And I think that everyone enjoyed it. And yeah, it was fun to see new little friend groups hanging out in the players' lounge and having dinner and stuff like that. Sorry, what was the other question?
Would you be interested in experiencing tournaments like that more so in the future, where there are men and women playing in tandem together at the same courses?
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoy watching the guys play and learning from them and taking a bit of their aggressiveness and adding it onto my game. And I hope that they learn and appreciate something from our game, too.
Speaking of the guys, I read where as a child you modeled your game after Tiger Woods. Like a lot of kids, you grew up saying, I am Tiger Woods. What about his game did you try to follow?
I still do that. So that was more actually during recent years that I've done that. But it's just his courage, like to actually hit the shot. If he has to hit it around a tree, he will do it. If he has a flop shot to do, he will do it instead of taking the bumper around and stuff like that. And yeah, I just like that because then you're always challenging yourself, and it builds confidence too when, you know, when you try something like that and it works, and then you're like, well, what else can I do? So it just makes you try more and gives that new aspect to the game.
You know, our Paige McKenzie has raved about your golf swing, this quick blur of power and precision and grace. There's this video of you catching the club after you swung. Like, what happened here? Because this video went viral.
I've done that for such a long time. And I've recently gotten better at actually catching it so it doesn't just fly away. But yeah, before I would just end up with the club on the ground. But then I thought that I was going to get fined if the club was on the ground. So I started practicing catching it instead. So that's how that happened.
You've had a lot of success early in your career. I mean, you top 20'd in the US Women's Open back in 2020, 2021. Again, you won multiple times on the Ladies European Tour, now on the LPGA Tour. Is any part of you surprised at the success you've had this quickly, or is it something you expected of yourself?
I don't think I really expected it, but my coach always says, don't expect anything, but be prepared for everything. So in my wildest dreams, I thought that there could be a possibility that I could do it, but I was also expecting that it could go really poorly. So I need to have a plan B and C and all through C as well. I wasn't expecting it, but very glad it happened.
You know, Maya, I've recognized this pipeline of players from Scandinavian countries ending up at Oklahoma State, Caroline Hedvall, for example, Victor Hovland. Why was it such a good fit for you?
I think it was a good fit because it really challenged me. It was a lot more practice than I was used to, and a lot more, I don't want to say stricter, but it was more like planned, like today we're doing this and we're playing this many holes, and we had qualifiers like four times a week. And, before that it was a lot of, just going out there and doing things myself. So I think it challenged me to listen more to authority, I guess. But yeah, I think that was good. And obviously I committed to different coaches than I actually had. But they had a Swedish coach and I liked him, and I think we got along well. So that's why I chose it initially.
One of the things going to college in the United States does for you, Maya, is you're certainly familiar with the landscape when you come here playing the LPGA Tour. There are 9 events left this season. You've earned your card. You're going to have it next year as well. What is your plan for the remainder of this year? And then what do you thinking of in terms of your goals, your expectations heading into 23?
I'll stick to my plan, and I was planning on taking this week off and then playing the LET here in Sweden next week. And then I was planning on having 2 weeks off anyway. So I'm going to stick to that plan and not rush into anything. But then I'll play Portland and the four in a row there, and then probably the LET in New York, and then I'll head home for, what is it, 2 or 3 weeks, and then come back for the Pelican and hopefully the finals. Yeah, I think next year I'm going to keep going with LPGA full-time and then play the LET events that I think are fun, because I will miss the people on the tour. I will miss the staff on the LET, and I was genuinely sad to leave. So I hope I can come back and visit a few times.
Well, Maya, sure is fun to watch you play. Congratulations, Skål. Best of luck going forward, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
All right, stay with us, folks. When Golf Today returns, we take a closer look at this week's field for the second leg of the playoffs and discuss our favorites to take home the FedEx Cup. Paige McKenzie breaks down the odds after the break. Lunch now. For the first time in BMW Championship history, the event will be held in the great state of Delaware. 70 players have qualified for the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, but due to early field updates, the field currently down to 68 players. A lot on the line, as only the top 30 will advance to the Tour Championship at East Lake. Let's take a look now at the outright odds for this week's BMW Championship presented by PointsBet. You see Rory McIlroy plus 1,000. John Rahm closely behind. You know, Rory and Rahm have done well in the playoffs. Historically, Patrick Cantlay there, the defending FedEx Cup champ, at plus 1,400. Let's handicap the race with Paige McKenzie as we look ahead to East Lake. Paige, it's great to see you. 1 week down in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Let's go through some of the odds here for the FedEx Cup. Let's start with Xander Schauffele. Terrific summer, but it really hasn't been talked about that much lately. What do you like about Xander?
Well, yeah, and we're talking about East Lake, too. And I just want to make that clear that this is the remainder of the playoffs. We have this week and then next week. And for Xander Schauffele, you're looking at plus 1,300 to win the FedEx Cup outright. And I'm loving Xander Schauffele based on his performance here. We've seen him perform extremely well at East Lake, and that's what it's going to take for whoever ultimately wins the FedEx Cup. And if you look at his recent results, his playoff time that he's gone and advanced to East Lake, going back to 2017, his rookie year where he won the event, his worst finish is a tie for seventh in 2018. A runner-up again in 2019, and then in 2020, it says T2, but he actually had the lowest 72-hole total. So according to the official World Golf rankings, he's actually given a win or a first-place finish for that year and then a fifth-place finish last year. So when you look at Xander Schauffele as it relates to the rest of the season, the last two FedEx Cup events, obviously he has to play halfway decent here to not put himself behind too far heading into the final event. But I don't know why. Honestly, he is handicapped as low as he is. He's sixth in the race, and he's the sixth favorite overall. And I feel like given his performance at East Lake, he may be given a little bit of bump. So I think he got some value at plus 1,300.
Hey, someone else who's got a history of good performances at East Lake's Rory McIlroy, the only player who can actually try for a third FedEx Cup victory. What stands out to you about where he is with his game right now and what his odds are looking like?
Obviously, he's had a tremendous year, but for me, I'm looking at Rory more as an inspirational play. It's only plus 600, so not a ton of value for Rory McIlroy, but he's been PGA Tour's white knight in this whole LIV Golf PGA Tour discussion. And when you saw his win at the RBC Canadian Open earlier this season, you saw that inspiration come out in his post-round interview talking about getting a one win more than Greg Norman, and we've seen Greg Norman chip off since then, that maybe in addition to the good memories from his past two wins here at East Lake, maybe he's going to bring some inspiration given the fact that he's been carrying the flag for the PGA Tour this season.
Yeah, Paige, and Justin Thomas has carried that flag as well. He added a major this year. He's also won a FedEx Cup. Do you like JT and his chances to win the Cup?
I do. I feel like, again, there might be a value play here at plus 1,500 for JT. And I love the symmetry. You mentioned winning the PGA Championship. Well, the last time he won the PGA Championship in 2017, what did he do? He went on to win the FedEx Cup. So perhaps there's symmetry here in 2022 where he can double down on the PGA Championship as well as the FedEx Cup. And he's another player that has played well at East Lake. Again, that is kind of where my focus is ultimately you have to be friends with that golf course to win this championship and win this tour-long race. And when you look at the East Lake scoring average since 2016, you see Xander Schauffele at the top of the list. I mentioned his record at this golf course. Rory McIlroy, a close second. And then Justin Thomas is the third best performer in the last six playings of the Tour Championship. Now, if you take only the players that have played the last six, and you see Justin Thomas has the most rounds, so some of those players not on the list. If you take only the players that have played the last six, Justin Thomas has a stroke average better by a full shot over the next best player, which happened to be Dustin Johnson. So, keeping that in mind, I also like Justin Thomas and his value this for this FedEx Cup playoff series.
Paige talking value picks and bringing value to this show. Thanks so much, Paige, for the insight.
Thanks, guys.
All right, but will we listen? What do you think?
She has absolutely sold me. I've been a believer in Xander Schauffele for quite a while, and nothing has changed. I mean, he didn't play great last week. He finished tied 57th at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, but Paige pointed out the form horse at East Lake going 5th, 2nd, 2nd, 7th, 1st in his last five starts. And one of those seconds was, as far as the world rankings are concerned,
a first. Yeah.
And, you know, he's a remarkably consistent player. And consistency gets you to this point of the season. The FedEx Cup is set up to reward consistency. But right now is when it starts to be set up to reward form horses and opportunistic players who have a course history.
Yeah.
And Xander Schauffele's history at East Lake is pretty much better than anyone's over the last few years, with the possible exception of Rory McIlroy. And I would actually argue Xander's probably got the edge on Rory there as well.
It's a fair point. The number one player in the world is still Scottie Scheffler, and I can't help but think about what happened 7 years ago when another Texan was hearing footsteps from an Australian who closed very strong. And, of course, I'm talking about Jordan Spieth, who ultimately won the FedEx Cup but was hearing Jason Day footsteps. And Jordan Spieth said, no, I'm the player of the year. And I know that Scottie Scheffler hasn't been in form of late. We're talking about small sample. He's missed two of his last three cuts. But I still think that Scottie Scheffler, before this FedEx Cup playoffs is said and done, we will hear his voice one more time. I think he's too good, too prideful, and I think it's important to him, with the great year he's already had, to finish the year the way he started the year.
And considering how much money Scottie Scheffler's already won this year, adding another $18 million to that, I mean, that's a healthy year.
Yes.
But you got to admit, it's also pretty intriguing that Will Zalatoris, he wins the first playoff event. Now he's leading the FedEx Cup points race. It'd be intriguing to see what the ball-striking ability of that guy will be like with the added confidence of having gotten that win and to make those putts down the stretch that he did. Does that carry over into the next couple of weeks
as well? It's a great point. And I still am struck by how much that crowd in Memphis, Germantown, Tennessee, was pulling for Will Zalatoris, and how I think the tour has found a new young star in this player. And with confidence with the flat stick, already one of the top two or three ball strikers in the game today, he's definitely going to be a force in years to come.
Certainly one of the most popular guys out there as well. Well, we like guys who take down big trophies over the years, and this guy did 15 years ago. You know the voice, but we love his cherubic face too. Colton Ost is on the call this week at the U.S. Amateur Championship, an event he knows a little something about winning. Colt will be with us right after the break.
And we're back on Golf Today. This week, Ridgewood Country Club and Arcola Country Club in Paramus, New Jersey, play host to the 122nd U.S. Amateur as the game's best amateurs vie for the Havemeyer Trophy, really one of the coolest trophies in the game. Love that view, by the way, from on high. Past five champs here. Doc Redman, a name you know. Victor Hovland making his way to the PGA Tour. Andy Ogletree getting it done. Tyler Strafacci out that foggy Band and Dunes and James Pyatt, late of Michigan State. Now, speaking of former champs, let's flashback way back, 2007. We're talking 15 years ago, U.S. amateur at the Olympic Club. Colton Nost beat Michael Thompson 2-1 in the championship match to join Ryan Moore as just the second golfer in history to win the U.S. amateur, Publix, and the U.S. amateur in the very same year. And that year, by the way, was fantastic for Colton Nost. Everything he accomplished, won that U.S. amateur, Publix, won the U.S. amateur, helped the U.S. win the Walker Cup, and he went 2-0-2. Third player to win three USGA events in a season, joining Bobby Jones and Jay Sigel, and attained the world number one amateur ranking. And Colt joins us now. Colt, when this week rolls around, U.S. Amateur Week, what memories come flooding back for you?
That I was pretty good at this game at one point. Not quite sure what happened, but, man, it's so cool to be here, you know, on the call for Golf Channel this week at the U.S. Amateur. I haven't been to one since I won in 2007, so really, really cool to be here at Ridgewood Country Club. This place is a monster, and it is going to be a lot of fun to cover this week.
Colt, how does the mindset change for these guys at this point in the week where they start to move from stroke play into match play? Because back in 2007, you won the Public Links as well as the U.S. Amateur, both going stroke play into match play. So you can speak to what that transition is like and how difficult it is.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you just got to get there. You got to get in that top 64, and then anything can happen. You know, for me, I had never played match play at all until the Public Links. I qualified, got in, and actually ended up cruising through pretty good. But as far as, you know, here at the USA, I remember at Olympic Club, I shot 69 on the difficult golf course, the Lakes course, and then moved over to the Ocean golf course and really struggled and ended up being the 45 seed. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we saw in the U.S. Women's Amateur last year, the girl that won was the 63 seed. So as long as you get there and you have a chance, I mean, these players are so good. They can beat anyone on any given day.
Colt, how about that? 2007, you win. We're in 2022. I met a couple of these young studs, the Ben Jameses of the world, Caleb Surratt. What's the biggest difference between the modern amateur and maybe your era 15 years ago?
Well, one, they just absolutely all smash it. I mean, they hit it so far. I was out there on the golf course today watching. And where these guys hit it, these bunkers are 300 to get to, 320 to get over. And, I mean, they're not even blinking at them. It is the amount of speed in the game nowadays is crazy. But you come to a golf course like Ridgewood where the fairways are pretty narrow and the rough is, you know, 4, 5, 6 inches in spots, you better hit the fairway. It doesn't matter how far you hit it, because if you miss the fairway, you have no chance around here.
Coach, there are a lot of rewards that come from winning the U.S. Amateur, including a spot in the Masters, spot in the U.S. Open, spot in the Open Championship. You elected back in 2007 to turn professional and give up your spots in those fields. Did you ever regret that?
I mean, I think now that I'm finished playing, yeah, you might regret it a little bit considering I never made it to the Masters. But at the time, I mean, Eamon, if you look at it, I was coming off such a great summer where I seemed to play well almost every week. I was the number one AM in the world. You know, my stock wasn't getting any higher. In my opinion, I got 3 starts in the fall on the PGA Tour. I thought I could go out there and win one of them right away. And I got 7 starts the next year. So, you know, looking back, it sucks that I never made it to the Masters. But, you know, I got out on the PGA Tour after 1 year on the Corn Ferry Tour. And at the end of the day, I'm not happy with my career. But the amount of time I spent out there and the relationships that I made, you know, it was a hell of a journey.
Colt, speaking of the PGA Tour, the news of the day that Tiger Woods planning to fly up to Delaware to meet with the PGA Tour membership about the best way to battle LIV golf going forward. What do you take from that news story? What do you think it kind of signifies that the 15-time major champ is kind of coming to the aid of the PGA Tour once again?
Well, first off, it says that he cares, which I think is awesome. The fact that he's taking time out of his day to go up there. You know, we know he can't play as much as he would like with the condition his body's in. But I love the fact he's going up there. He's fighting for the PGA Tour. And I think when Tiger speaks, these players are going to really listen. And they're going to take it to heart because, you know, I don't think they would be playing for the money they are if it wasn't for Tiger Woods. So this is a big deal that he's going all the way up to Delaware to spend some time with these guys.
Colt, you spend a lot of time out there on the PGA Tour. Do you sense that there's a splitting into camps in any way among players in terms of what they think the best solution to this current situation is? Or is there more unity out there among PGA Tour members than we might think?
You know, I think a lot of the guys, no matter what, whether you chose to play LIV or you chose to stay, you know, their friendship stayed intact. Now, I haven't been out there since the lawsuit happened, and I know that has kind of, you know, kind of gone the wrong way with some of the players. They did not appreciate that, because at the end of the day, you know, these guys are suing their friends, and it's not a comfortable situation right now for any of them. So, yeah, I would say there's starting to be that divide, which, you know, we don't want to have, but that's exactly what's happening right now.
Colt, are you concerned, as someone who's involved as a broadcaster in this game, with the fracturing at the highest level of the pro game, or do you think that ultimately this thing will shake out for the betterment of professional golf as a whole?
It's a great question. I am concerned. You know, I want the best players to play against each other as often as possible. And when they start, you know, taking players and they're going over the LIV and they're not allowed to play on the PGA Tour, that's a problem, because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the majors yet. If they can't play the majors, then, you know, you're going to be missing some of the world's best players at these big events. And then there's always going to be, well, you won this tournament, you won this major, and so-and-so wasn't playing or something like that. But, you know, people always ask me, do you see them coming together at some point? And I just don't see how it's possible, in my opinion. You know, you take guys that have been loyal, like a Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, the Rory McIlroy, and then you let a guy like Dustin Johnson, who got $150 billion, whatever it was, and say, oh, you can come back and play now. Like, how's that going to make those guys feel? Like, here's Justin Thomas going to be like, wait a second, I stayed loyal to you. He got $150 million, and he gets to come back and play? Like, that's not really fair. So I don't understand how they could ever work together, in my opinion.
Colt, circling back for a moment to the U.S. Amateur, it has been 15 years. You've transitioned from player into broadcaster. Does it still give you a little tingly feeling when you see your name on that trophy with some of the other names that preceded you there?
It's really cool, Eamon, honestly. I mean, to be on there with Tiger, Jack, Arnold Palmer, I mean, some of the greats that have played this game, it is special. You know, driving around here, seeing a lot of the USGA guys that I haven't seen in a long time, because, frankly, I wasn't good enough to play in the U.S. Open, so I didn't get to see any of these guys at the major championships, but it is cool. It's awesome to be back. You know, it shows you also that I'm getting old, because one of the guys that was leading after yesterday, Luke Gutchesky, I played with his father, Scott, in my first ever event as a pro down in San Antonio. So it's kind of crazy that I could possibly be talking about Scott Gutchesky's kid here in a couple of days.
Colt, how often are you asked about 15 years ago, you know, when you're at an airport or somebody, you know, has listened to your podcast? How often are you reminded of what you accomplished 15 years ago?
Yeah, quite a bit, honestly. You know, when I do interviews or do podcasts, that's normally one of the things that gets brought up, is, you know, me skipping the Masters after winning the USAM. But, man, that was just a special year total. Even in college, I played great all year long. I'll never forget Ernie Keeney, tripping Hank Keeney's father, told me early in the summer, he's like, you're going to win the U.S. Amateur this year. And I just laughed. I'd never even made match play at the U.S. Amateur in my two other previous tries. So for him to say that, I thought was quite a bold statement. And I got to Olympic Club, fell in love with the place, and, you know, knew I was one of the best players on the planet at the time.
Well, Colt, I hope that tingly feeling continues for the rest of the week and beyond. Thanks so much for the time. Enjoy it at Ridgewood.
Oh, thank you so much. And, Eamon, nice to see you smile. I don't see that very often.
I'm just smiling, thinking of you getting tingly feelings, Colt. It's normally sciatica at our age.
See you, partner.
See you, guys.
Oh, so much fun. What does the winner receive? A gold medal. How about custody of the Havermeyer Trophy for 1 year? I put that word custody. It's like a movie. Custody. Starring Liam Neeson. Exemption from qualifying for the next 10 U.S. Amateurs. Exemption in the 2023 U.S. Open at LACC. Wow, how about exemption in the Open 2023 conducted by the RNA? Must be an amateur and likely invitation into the 2023 Masters Tournament. Must be an amateur. And a reminder, you can catch coverage of the 122nd U.S. Amateur tomorrow, 3 p.m. on Peacock. Coverage continues at 4 p.m. Eastern on Golf Channel. We are back right after the break.
A terrific 2021, this was going to be the year of Jon Rahm. But as the season draws to a close, it has not been his best. We'll dig into what has been missing. And this is the week when 70 gets cut to 30. Let's take a look at the boys on the bubble for a spot in the field at the Tour Championship. Golf Today continues now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
This week, the PGA Tour is in Wilmington, Delaware for the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Marks the first time this event is being held in Delaware. And the big news of the day, 15-time major champ Tiger Woods en route to Wilmington to attend a players' meeting to discuss ways the PGA Tour can combat live golf down the line. Hope your Tuesday is off to a great start. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. Same as it ever was. We're talking a little bit of golf. We're also talking about meetings and kind of this chess match between the PGA Tour and live golf.
Tiger's not playing, still making news, still going for the W.
Yeah.
Out there. I mean, these are obviously fractious days in this game, but Tiger's very much in the camp of trying to ring fence the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour's best players against live golf. He made that very clear in his public comments at St. Andrews at the Open Championship. He's been working pretty closely with guys like Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas on what the vision is that they want to see going forward, which, from what I hear, seems to be mostly aligned, although not entirely, with Jay Monahan and his tour team of executives. And this meeting is clearly about pushing their agenda forward.
Yeah, it seemed like in July at the Open Championship, Tiger was appealing to kind of the soul of the game as he sees it, digging it out of the dirt, no handouts, 72 holes, you know, kind of showing us how he got it done, how he viewed, you know, his, you know, kind of view of greatness and hard work. And he expects that from media members who follow him, his family. He values hard work. And I just wonder if we've now moved from that point to now, like, the vision of the PGA Tour as he sees it going forward.
I think a lot of it is the idea of digging it out of the dirt, the idea that you're disincentivized to work for anything if you have the guaranteed money up front. But I also think it's the fact that it's the legacy Tiger has built. Mm. And this is what he has spent 25 years constructing, is arguably the greatest career in the history of this game. And to then be told by Greg Norman and Mohammed bin Salman that we can replicate that or perhaps beat that with 54-hole circus events, that, I think, has really kind of rubbed Tiger the wrong way. And I don't necessarily know that how much of it is loyalty to the very concept of the PGA Tour as much as loyalty to, this is the legacy I've built, this is where I've built it, it's legitimate golf, it means something to win here. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, for more on this story and this meeting, Kira K. Dixon joins us from Delaware once again. Kira, as far as this meeting is concerned, how much are the players paying attention?
Well, Damon, I would say the players are very much paying attention. With so many of the top players in the world, this is definitely an excellent opportunity to have some very important conversations. And two of those conversations that we know of will be happening today. One is a meeting at 3 p.m. with the Players Advisory Council. I'm told that this is more of a standard procedures meeting just to talk through some basic matters for players on the PGA Tour. New members of the Players Advisory Council, like Max Homa and Keith Mitchell, will be in attendance there. Following that meeting this evening, there will be a meeting that's limited to a smaller group of the top players in the world. And a player did confirm to me that Tiger Woods will be in attendance and that this conversation is the second installment of a conversation that started in Ireland at Adair Manor at the J.P. McManus Pro-Am a few weeks before the Open Championship. And that the goal of that meeting is to just continue discussing ideas for the betterment of the PGA Tour. But we don't stop there, Damon. There are more meetings occurring tomorrow. Jay Monahan is also on site, and he's continuing this series of meetings that he's been having over the last few months, just giving players the opportunity to sit down with him in a Q&A format or a roundtable discussion so that they can state any concerns that they have or ask him questions in person.
Wow, Jay Monahan already on site. Tiger Woods en route to Delaware. Much more from Kira in just a little bit. You know, the thought was that maybe with the PGA Tour victory and the temporary restraining order that they could kind of coast for a little bit. How much is this an indication that they are still kind of ready to fight for what they believe is right?
There is no time to coast out there. I mean, perhaps a valid criticism could be made at the PGA Tour that it's taken them a couple of years to get to this point, doing a lot of work in the background, but ultimately this thing has started to really accelerate in the spring. And I think the PGA Tour has been playing a little bit of catch-up, frankly, since then, as has the DP World Tour on the other side of the Atlantic. But what this is telling you is that players have a vision as well, that they are not merely rubber stamping whatever the tour executive team decides as the best means forward, is that the players have a vision themselves, and that vision really could bring into question the exact business model that is preferable for the PGA Tour going forward. And it's really interesting that Kira mentioned the meeting this evening is just for the top players, because there are plenty of conspiracy theorists out there, and this casts the Cameron Smith withdrawal in a new light, because there's clearly evidence that Cameron Smith may be going to LIV Golf. He's pointedly refused to address the question in any clear manner for the last couple of months. But if it's a meeting of the top 15, 20 players to discuss this, and if there was a perception that Cam Smith was going, he probably would not be that welcome in that room. Mm. And if he didn't show up, it would be considered almost as an evidence that he was going. So it's very possible, perhaps likely, that the hip issue is why Cameron Smith isn't there. But if he is inclined toward LIV Golf, then he's probably not upset that he's not on site in Delaware, so he doesn't have to make the decision as to whether or not to show up to this meeting, assuming he was invited.
Yeah, hip discomfort. I needed a little bit more than that. Maybe I've been covering sports too long. I needed a little bit more than hip discomfort as we sit here on the eve of the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. I want to ask you about how the players on the PGA Tour, how their tone has changed really since that lawsuit was filed. And this kind of jives with your point about Cameron Smith. The players are no longer just saying, oh, these are my buddies, they've made their choice. Now it's like, you have taken us to court. You are costing us money now. We know that LIV Golf has said they can handle all the lawyer fees. Now these players are going after the PGA Tour and their dollars. How much has that been kind of an indication of the change in tone that we've heard, and why Cameron Smith would be wise to not find himself in a meeting with players coming against a lawsuit where he may end up playing?
Well, we should probably draw the distinction that Cam Smith, as he is still a PGA Tour member, is currently not party to any LIV lawsuit, but
correct.
I don't think players on tour are distinguishing between the 10 plaintiffs in that suit versus the other guys there. Maybe to an extent. Rory McIlroy said he's got a little more admiration for the guys who didn't join on the suit, guys like Koepka and Johnson, Graham McDowell. But the 10 who did, it has distinctly soured relations. And we even heard Colt Knost talk about it earlier, that the idea of the intact friendships that people have been parroting for so many months during this issue, that's gone out the window at this stage. And we even saw it on the show last week. We heard Kevin Streelman, who's one of the most even-keeled, amiable guys out
there. Sweetheart of a man. Yeah.
Saying, you know, Taylor Gooch is my friend, but I'm not going to have dinner with him. I'm not going to have breakfast with him.
Yeah.
And that speaks to the level of disharmony that exists out there now, because it's one thing to see these guys go make their choice, and none of the other players really seem to publicly begrudge them that. Make your choice, go pick up your big check, go enjoy LIV Golf. Mm. But the idea that they were going to double dip, as the players kept referring to it, the idea that they were going to free ride on the PGA Tour's platform and, on crucially, their world ranking points, and then kind of use that to build the LIV platform, that's what really rubbed players the wrong way. The idea that they were kind of being taken as fools, that we're going to use you as much as we wish and then just cast you aside and go with the LIV Golf platform that we've built up. And players, they're not buying that at all, and it's definitely fracturing relationships.
We've heard from the likes of Will Zalatoris. We've heard from the likes of Kevin Streelman. How about the strength of the voice of Tiger Woods? Not in the field this week. He hasn't won a major since 2019. You know, not the player at the height of his power, but maybe at the height of his voice in some ways.
Yeah, he is the loudest voice in the room. Mm. And Tiger Woods' voice speaks with more authority than anyone else's voice in the room. Because, in a way, Tiger's also perceived as having less of a vested interest in it. Because his best days are behind him, he hasn't been competing very much, frankly, for the last 3 years, really, since he won that Masters. So he's less compromised, in a way, in the public imagination than the current top-ranked players are, but no one is going to speak in that meeting with more authority than Tiger Woods.
It'll be fascinating to find out what comes out of that meeting. John Rahm, also someone who has preached his loyalty to the PGA Tour. So let's flash back to May when Jon Rahm grabbed his first and only win of the season at the Mexico Open at Vedanta. Big Spaniard entered the final round with a two-shot lead to just enough to grab his seventh PGA Tour win. And since that win, you know, a little this, a little that, couple top 10 finishes in six starts. Best finish that tied for fifth last week at the FedEx St. Jude Championship. In the majors, you see, you know, T48, T12, T34. Not really kind of where we're used to seeing Jon Rahm. Has fallen from number two to number five in the official world golf rankings. Let's say hello to Kira once again. Might not be the season on the golf course that Jon Rahm would have liked, Kira, but he's just one of many players getting set for this week in Delaware.
He is. He's actually one of 68 players that will be here in Delaware. Only two players in the FedEx Cup standings of that top 70 are not here. That's Tommy Fleetwood, who's attending to some family matters, and Cameron Smith, who's citing a hip injury. I can also exclusively report, guys, that we are in the land of the Philly cheesesteak. Philadelphia is only 25 miles away, and they've got a stand here set up. So those 68 players will be able to have Philly cheesesteaks all week on the range, which is maybe a good or a bad thing for me. But since this is the first time that we're having a PGA Tour event in the state of Delaware, as you mentioned, Damon, that means this is the first time that most of these players are seeing the course, and they discussed what it's like to prepare for a course for the very first time.
So I don't know if it's the event itself that, you know, gets me going, being a playoff event, or the fact that the type of golf course we play is something that I like, right? This northeast part of the country, and even the Chicago area, like Medina, Olympia Fields, and Caves Valley all have a very similar feel as a golf course. So it is the type of golf that I like, that I feel comfortable on, right? So maybe it's that. I don't know. I haven't been out there yet, but for what I see, it's pretty much another one of those golf courses that looks similar to that, right? It looked like there's some length to it, sloped greens, thick rough, narrow fairways where, you know, you got to hit it really well. And even though it's a difficult setup, if the weather doesn't get bad, you're still going to have to shoot a low number out there like we saw last year. So I'm comfortable on this type of greens and this type of grass, so maybe that's why my history on this event has been good.
I think it varies. I've played golf courses that I've not played before and had good results, and likewise around golf courses and had bad ones. So it's, I wouldn't really say, to me it goes back to, you know, whether it suits your eye, whether it suits your game. You know, this golf course is probably going to suit certain people over others this week, and I've not played it yet, so I don't know who. I think for me, the golf courses that I've played blind before and done well around, I look back and there's not really many holes that sort of intimidate me or I feel uncomfortable on. And I think that's a big factor is, you know, is just how you see the shots on the golf course and how you feel over it as to whether you're going to play well or not.
It's a huge property. It's in really good shape. It has all the feelings that the weekend's going to get really firm. I think guys who drive it well, guys who like putt well and can hit their irons up in the air are going to perform well here.
Maverick talked me through his preparation process for this week. He said he played a six-hole loop yesterday. He'll play nine holes today, and then he'll play in the Pro-Am tomorrow. He's also got a statistician out with him, Hunter Stewart, who played in the Walker Cup with him. And although that he doesn't have shot link data to lean on for prior events here, he said, you know, he's pretty good at figuring out golf courses.
No doubt. From Philly cheesesteaks to PGA Tour meetings, Kira K. Dixon covering all the bases for us on this Tuesday. Now, we just heard from Jon Rahm. Let's bring Paige McKenzie back. Paige, where do you see Jon Rahm at this point in the playoffs? I think we'd all admit it's been a bit of a disappointing season, the win notwithstanding.
Yeah, it feels like it. It feels like there's been a bit of a letdown from the headlines that Jon Rahm seemed to be marquee in all of last year. We haven't seen it quite as much this year, but there has been some serious bright spots. And I liked what he had to say about looking at this golf course, because I think it's going to suit what he's been doing really well this season, which is ball striking. Obviously, that's what he's known for. He's been known for being a great driver. Looking back at last season, he was second on the PGA Tour in strokes gained off the tee. What's impressive is he's even better. He's leading the PGA Tour this season in strokes gained, and a lot of it has to do with that second number, the driving distance. Jon Rahm has gained 10 yards off the tee. That's incredibly impressive in a one-year jump for a player that was already what I felt like was maximizing a lot of what his ability was off the tee. And then when I talk about ball striking, that also includes the iron play. His greens and regulation number has improved. He went from second on the PGA Tour to first. He has the best greens and regulation number of his career. I can also add, Damon, that his proximity is also closer this season compared to last season. So there's a ton of highlights as it relates to Jon Rahm, but then you must wonder, why is it that he isn't winning as prolifically or is talking or being in talked about as often? And it has to do with his short game. And that goes for both the chipping and the putting. When his strokes gained around the green, you can see dropping from 42nd last year down to 136th on the PGA Tour, scrambling those up and down numbers. He's lost 5%, which again puts him now out well outside the top 100 on the PGA Tour, where he was in the top 20 last year. And this one I also found to be interesting, Damon, and that's three-putt avoidance. To me, three putts just feel like you're throwing strokes away. And last year, he was one of the best at the PGA Tour in avoiding those three putt numbers, and now one of the worst on the PGA Tour in that three putt avoidance rank.
Paige, you and I were kind of doing similar research last night. I was also curious about the short game because this was a player going into this season that I thought would have a Scottie Scheffler or Cam Smith or Sam Burns type of season. My focus was on the sand game because like Paige showed with the scrambling and the three-point avoidance, the numbers just have not been as good. It's been kind of a drop over the last several seasons. Sand saves 15th in 2020. He was hitting it to 8 feet 2 inches out of the sand. Then last year, 37th, he's hitting to 8 feet 8 inches. And then this season, 196th, hitting it to 10 feet 7 inches. That's more than 2 feet farther away from the hole than he had been. It's one thing to have 8-footers for par, Eamon, it's nothing to have 10-footers. That means that your short game, not just from the sand, but also, as Paige noted, from around the greens, has not been where it has previously.
And the length of putts he actually faces kind of matters, because if you looked at his putting from almost every distance last year, Jon Rahm was better than average on the PGA, significantly better than average. If you look at his putting from every distance this year on the PGA Tour, he's pretty much right in that average line. And the difference between being average and above average on the PGA Tour in greens is the difference that we're seeing reflected in these statistics right here. I mean, last year, his putting inside of 10 feet on the PGA Tour, he was ranked 11th. He's currently ranked 56th. Not the biggest drop-off in the world, but it's a big enough drop-off to take a guy from where we saw last year, where he was no worse than 8th in any of the four majors he played, to this year, where the only top 20 he's had was a tied 12th. In the U.S. Open. That's a big drop-off for a guy like Jon Rahm. Now, he's got a lot going on in his life. He just had a second child as well. And if you go back through the history books, you'll see a lot of guys who have a lull for a year, maybe 2 years after they win that first major title.
That's a great point.
Maybe that's what we're seeing out of Jon Rahm. It's not as though he has an uncomplicated life when you're traveling the world with two pretty young children. But the drop-off has not been that significant. And it bears pointing out that he has exactly as many PGA Tour wins this year as he did last year, despite that drop-off.
And the memorial, we remember the six-shot lead that he lost.
His name ain't on the trophy,
but Paige, these margins are thin. I mean, a half shot a round is worth two shots a week.
Great point, and I'm actually glad you brought that up, and I'm glad you brought up the sand saves, because if you look at the number of attempts and how many over par he's been 30 over par coming out of the bunker this year on less attempts than last year. So when you take the differential into account, he's 17 shots higher over par just from the bunkers. He's 7 shots higher just from three putts. So 24 shots over 47 rounds, which was the measured rounds, and you're looking at your half shot, which is more than the stroke average difference from last year to this year just on sand and three-putt avoidance. So you can pretty easily pinpoint exactly where the strokes are that he has lost when you compare last year to this year.
And you have to think that a player of his ilk with the technology available is aware of where those deficiencies are and wants to address them with these final two events in the playoffs. Great stuff from Paige.
Thanks, guys.
Top 40 in this playoffs and eligibility points list. Just how about this time of year, Eamon? We expect so much from these players on the bubble, trying to get into that top 30, three or four majors available to them. This part of the year is about production, performance, and stamina.
Bartenders calling last orders in the Last Chance Saloon here, Damon. There's a lot of guys with a lot of talent who are just outside the top 30 on this list. I mean, I really look at a guy like Maverick McNealy. He's 32nd there. And he was the great hope of American golf. He was the world number one amateur back 2016, 2017. His professional career's kind of been a lot slower progress than we thought. He's actually only made two starts in majors as a professional here. But he's coming off his best season. He's had four top 10 finishes this season. He was second in the very first event of the season at the Fortinet Championship. Stalled a little bit since then, but he's put himself in a better position heading into the second of the three playoff events than he's ever been in before. And he's one of those guys who's got to be itching at this point for that next move into what he thought seemed to be his destiny going back a few years.
Interesting that you look at the younger players, because for me, it's the older war horses of the PGA Tour so far, like a player like Adam Scott or a player like Lucas Glover, players who have had great moments in this game but are looking for kind of a cherry on top of the sundae, a way to go out on their own terms. And Lucas Glover feeling like he still has more to accomplish. And Adam Scott pridefully saying, yeah, I have 14 PGA Tour wins, but my goal is 20. And to watch these players whose maybe their motivation has ebbed and flowed over the last several years, and they've been very honest about that, but trying to find a finishing kick to their careers in the face of some 20-something studs on the PGA Tour.
But isn't an interesting discussion in itself as to who feels more pressure these days? Is it the guys who've actually accomplished something in the past and they just don't want the dying of the light at this point yet? And they still think they might have a bullet or two left in the chamber. Whereas it's a guy like Maverick McNealy. When you look at a Will Zalatoris and a Scottie Scheffler and your peers, and you see these guys just launching like rockets, you start to wonder, is your moment going to pass you? At what point do you start to feel like yesterday's generation, even at 26 years old, in this game? And to me, that's what's intriguing about McNealy, all the talent in the world, and just still hasn't made the breakthrough that seemed to be his destiny from when he was the top of the amateur game.
Yeah, number 32. Maybe he can take a page out of the number 40. Trey Mullinex, someone who similarly had a fantastic amateur career, college career, and has kind of had to wait a little bit, delayed gratification in his win at the Barbasol, and having, you know, Justin Thomas, who was a college teammate, so, you know, that's who you are, and congratulations, can't wait to see you, you know, in the playoffs. And you're right, I think when you have those expectations as a young player and you have some peers who have had success quickly, you know, like a Colin Morikawa, for example, or Victor Hovland, that weight has to get heavier and heavier as the weeks and months go on without you getting that victory.
And it's not even the peers. It's the guys who are younger than you, the kids you used to stuff in the high school locker. I mean, you look at that list, and number 27, Sahith Theegala, is on there. He's a guy who's just launched himself on the tour this year and looks, again, another one of these guys who plays a wonderfully aggressive game that people love to watch and rally around. He looks like a guy you're going to expect to win, almost in the mold of a Zalatoris. You think, how can this guy not win? And you're surprised if a season goes by when he doesn't. Nobody talks about Maverick McNealy in that sense anymore. Yeah. And they haven't since he first started. And to me, he's got to be feeling that pressure a little bit. Even at 26, the clock does tick a little bit. Some guys still don't mature into their 20s or 30s in this game. In the way it used to be in the old days, but you don't have a straightforward line of progress in this game. A lot of things can get in the way. And McNealy, to me, is just one of those intriguing guys because it's rare enough where you see a guy who was so impressive as an amateur to get to the world number one amateur ranking, who suddenly seems to have stalled in the pro ranks as others start to get in the fast lane.
And you'll remember when he came out of Stanford, I mean, the thought was, is he going to turn pro or is he going to join, you know, the business world with his father's son, Microsystems, a very curious mind, and he decided to pursue this professional career. And someone who has had some strong weeks, in particular out west at Pebble Beach, a golf course he's very familiar with as someone who attended Stanford. But you're right, it has to be tough as these young players, not just his peers, but as you say, behind him, push him throughout this past season.
Yeah, I mean, time doesn't stand still for anyone out here. Even for 26-year-olds, you can start to feel pretty old pretty quickly. Mm. I mean, look how we talk about Ricky Fowler as having hit a rough patch in his career, and he's some years removed from his biggest season when he won, obviously, the Players' Championship. Mm. And Ricky's still only 33 years old, 32 years old, so he's starting to feel like a generation and a half ago.
Yeah.
That's a tough place to be when you're still pretty young.
It's a great game, but, man, it's a hard profession to succeed at. And the PGA Tour gets ready for the BMW Championship this week. We have some news. Two future venues for the second leg of the playoffs have been announced. In 2025, the BMW will return to Caves Valley Golf Club, site of that great Cantlay DeChambeau duel, hosted the BMW last year. And then in 2026, the BMW will head to Bellerive Country Club for the first time since 2008. And then back in 2018, you recall that great PGA Championship. You had Koepka, you had Tiger, you had Adam Scott. Really one of the most exciting majors in recent memory. So golf today continues right after this break. We're back on Golf Today this week. Ridgewood Country Club in Paramus, New Jersey. Great spot. Plays host to the 122nd U.S. Amateur as the game's best AMs vie for that Havemeyer Trophy. Now, this week's field includes two amateur players who have already competed in LIV golf events, Arizona State senior David Puge and Thailand's TK Chantananuwat. Yeah, both players teed it up in the inaugural LIV golf event at Centurion Club in June. The London event marked TK's only LIV start, while Puge additionally competed last month at Trump Bedminster. Take a look at the ways that players can lose their amateur status. According to the USGA, accepting a prize with a value exceeding the prize limit, $1,000, or accepting prize money in a handicap competition, playing as a professional, accepting payment for giving instruction, or accepting employment at a golf club professional, or membership of an association of professional golfers. So, Eamon, we know the USGA is okay with this, been in contact with these players who are in the field. Are you okay with this arrangement?
Absolutely. There's absolutely no reason why these guys shouldn't, excuse me, or can't play in the US Amateur Championship. You know, the whole name, image, likeness developments in terms of amateur sport are still very grey when it comes to golf, and particularly in a sport where we've always had this sense that there was a very clear demarcation, that if you're taking money or any kind of prize, you're no longer an amateur.
Right.
That's not the case anymore. And I checked in with USGA this morning, and they said that they've had conversations with these players and they are comfortable that these players have retained their amateur status. Now, they have, but the players have said that while they have not taken the hundreds of thousands of dollars in prize money that they may have won, that they have been compensated in other ways because of the name, image, likeness deal. What the details of that are, we don't know. I don't know if the USGA knows that, but the USGA certainly seemed comfortable that these guys still live up to the standard set for amateur status, so there's no reason why they shouldn't play. Mm.
You and I love this game. Our Paige McKenzie played it at the highest level, was a fantastic and decorated player at the University of Washington. Your thoughts on what we're seeing here in terms of these players who played in a LIV golf event now competing in the U.S. Amateur?
I think it's been a very underreported part of the LIV story. I've been suspect of the pipeline is what I'll call it. The best collegiate players. What are they going to choose to do if LIV decides to throw a bunch of money at them? And in this case, you've got amateur players who, again, likely are being compensated in some fashion. This name and likeness issue is not new. You have Rose Zhang and Rachel Heck on the women's side that have signed deals with Nike and Adidas. This is all above board as it relates to NCAA and amateur status rules. So you have to assume that there may be some money being changed hands. And if LIV is able to continue to pull players from the collegiate ranks, from the amateur ranks, get them into the system that they would be then able to turn pro and have a place to play, that should be worrisome. Mm. It should be worrisome for the PGA Tour that the LIV would be able to capture the pipeline. And when you consider that it's not the same thing as PGA Tour players leaving that then wouldn't be able to come back. These are players who hypothetically or theoretically would still be able to go to the PGA Tour at some point. There's not as much risk from the amateurs or the collegiate players that would choose to go to LIV rather than PGA Tour, and it would give them a place to play prior to going to Korn Ferry Tour. And I know that some of the qualification standards have changed to make it easier for the best college players to advance to the PGA Tour quicker. And I think that this is a catalyst for that change that the PGA Tour has made.
Great point that you're making, Paige. I mean, we see this arms race already, I think, as far as NCAA football and basketball is concerned with name, image, and likeness. And I think that golf is not exempt from that as well in terms of young players and kind of where they may ultimately end up.
It may force the PGA Tour to rethink the whole idea of PGA Tour University to, instead of directing these guys to the Korn Ferry Tour, to directing a couple of the top guys perhaps directly onto the PGA Tour instead of funneling them onto a developmental tour.
Yeah, stay tuned, as we say in the business. Great stuff from Paige McKenzie.
Well, today is National Roller Coaster Day.
Oh.
Who knew it? So after the break, we want to hear from you. Who's been the biggest thrill this season? We'll share your answers after the break. Some news today regarding the 2023 European Solheim Cup team. Captain Suzanne Pettersson has named Dame Laura Davies, Caroline Martens and Anna Nordqvist as assistant captains. The competition will head to Finca Cortesen in Spain next September. And today is National Roller Coaster Day. Damon, I did it once in my life, never again. There's certain things I do not need to do twice. Because that guy in the front right there, that would have been me.
That was you.
Agonized look.
The revolution back in the day at Magic Mountain, the cyclone in Brooklyn, that actually hurt my neck.
That thing is made of wood, Damon. Why would you get on that?
It's like rickety, you know. When I was a kid, I was afraid. Then I had like a sweet spot in the teenage years where I liked them, but now I'm afraid again. I'm just too old. They hurt, these roller coasters.
Well, our social question of the day is, today is National Roller Coaster Day. Which golfer has been the biggest thrill to watch this season?
Wow.
So here is Rick's answer to that question.
Look at that kid. Is he enjoying it or is he scared? Rory.
I like Rick's brevity here. No explanation is required.
He has more characters if he wants them.
Well, it's been a year of highs and lows. You know, the majors not won on the regular tour events that have been won.
Yeah, Rory has been a roller coaster. Ricky Fowler, though. Wow, you want to talk about a roller coaster.
And another answer here, a strange one, though. Ricky Fowler. A thrill ride? Spill ride? What do you think?
More of a spill ride, and now the caddy change. You know, maybe that helps him going forward. And we saw it with Will Zalatoris with the caddy change.
That's true, but a roller coaster has some highs as well as the lows, and I haven't seen many highs from Ricky so far this year.
Well said. All right, buddy, time now for the 19th hole. And speaking of Will Zalatoris, he locked up that first PGA Tour win Sunday. Memphis, his putt on the 72nd hole. Oh, put him into a playoff. What are they going to say now? Later telling the media that was Steph Curry, that was inspiration. And Will said in his presser, "I follow the Warriors like crazy." And when he said that, it kind of related to my journey so far. So Steph actually answered Will, "Yeah, what are they going to say now? Keep going, young man. It's all fuel to the fire." That's pretty cool. Steph Curry having some fun with Will Zalatoris. Final thoughts. You want to talk about a roller coaster? I mean, this year has been a roller coaster in this game.
It never really ends, does it? As much outside the ropes as inside the ropes. And thankfully, at least the outside the ropes activity is happening but outside of a tournament day this week. So by the time Thursday rolls around, we can focus on the 30 guys who are going to make it through at the end of the week to Eastlake. But as of today, a lot of this attention is going to focus on, I suppose, the politics of the tour on the outside of the ropes in terms of Tiger flying up for this player meeting tonight, the PAC meeting that will happen before that. I suspect that there is if Tiger's coming up, Tiger is coming up because the sentiment is moving his way, or he thinks he can make a decisive push to move the tour towards a course of action that he and some of the other top players think is the best means to defend themselves against the live threat.
Tiger Woods, 46, with his current body, you know, having to work on being the competitive golfer that he wants to be, taking the day, Tuesday, not in the field, flying up to Delaware. I mean, just really kind of warming to this role as an ambassador, as a voice in this game, Arnold Palmer or Jack Nicklaus.
It's a question, I suppose, if Tiger wants to do this or if Tiger thinks he needs to do it. I suspect it might be more the latter. Tiger knows the weight he can bring to this argument, and unlike the rest of his career, he's proven now that he's up for the fight.
Well said. Golf Central today, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, with more on Tiger and this meeting. We will see you tomorrow.